This is The Science Show in America.
This is Copley Square in the middle of Boston. I'm surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of people all protesting against what Trump seems to be doing to science. The rally is about to begin.
If you're a scientist and you're willing to wear a white lab coat, we have some here for you. Come on up.
May I ask you a question?
Sure.
You're a scientist?
Yes.
What do you do?
Biology and cancer research.
And why are you here today?
Because science are facts and it should be supported.
And you feel threatened?
Yes.
May I ask you a question as well?
Yeah, yeah.
How come you're here today?
Because I want to stand up for science and I hope that the public appreciates that.
Hundreds of people?
Yeah.
Are you surprised?
No, not really. I think people are starting to feel threatened that science might be under attack and facts might be up for debate when they shouldn't be. So I'm not surprised at all.
Thank you very much indeed. May I ask you a question?
Sure. Where are you from?
Robin Williams, ABC, Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Why are you here?
I'm a scientist and I'm here to stand with my colleagues to support science and the importance of facts and rational discourse and an international community to do the best innovation for our planet and our communities.
And your colleagues around, are they friends, people you know?
There are friends, there are colleagues, there are neighbors.
In other words, non-scientists as well?
Absolutely. Boston is a big science city. Science is incredibly important for the economy, and Bostonians know that.
Thank you very much. 500 Women Scientists.
Yes. 500 Women Scientists is an organization that was founded after the election for women scientists to provide a support network to each other. We have an open pledge online to him. 16,000 other women scientists have signed in over 100 countries. I'll be talking about it.
You'll be talking about it here today.
Yes.
Thank you very much indeed. There are men here. Ah, here's a man. Why are you here, sir?
I'm here because I'm concerned about the lack of understanding about what scientists do among politicians in the country, and we're trying to demonstrate that today.
And are demonstrations by scientists a common thing in the United States?
They are extremely uncommon. We like to sit in our labs and just do work with hard numbers and things, and we don't like expressing opinions about the kind of work we do. There's no such thing as a liberal scientist or a conservative scientist in a political sense.
And what's your line?
I am an astronomer.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Are you a scientist?
I am. I'm a professor of biology at MIT.
MIT, no less. And I see it's a five-year-old here as well. Hello, what's your name?
I'm Daisy.
And you've got a sign that says, stand up for science, because your mummy's a scientist.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for standing up for science.
Woo! All right, let's get our voices warmed up, everyone. So we're here in alliance, standing up for science. We're here in alliance, standing up for science. We're here in alliance, standing up for science.
Thank you everyone for coming out. I'm just overwhelmed by the turnout. More than 1,000 of you are here. It's just incredible. Today's rally was organized by the Natural History Museum and climatetruth.org. The Natural History Museum works with scientists, community groups, and museums around the country, bringing them together around pressing contemporary concerns and global challenges. And we are in the business of science communication, and that is what we're here to stand up for, to show the ways in which science protects our communities and makes our lives better and safeguards a future for all of us.
2 days earlier at the AAAS meeting in Boston, we heard this from Gretchen Goldman, former chief scientist John Holdren, and Professor Jane Lubchenco.
President Trump isn't going to respect science or respect scientists. Right out of the gate, we saw gag orders placed on federal agency communications. We saw halts on grants and contracts and hiring freezes. And we've seen scientific information start to disappear from government websites. And all of these signs are troubling. But what I'm most concerned about now is what they're doing to the process by which we use science to inform policy decisions. Right now, threats from this administration as well as from Congress indicate that they're looking to dismantle the very process by which we use science to inform decision-making. There's several troubling bills in Congress. This combined with President Trump's executive order on regulations, where you have to remove two to issue one new regulation. This is illogical, it's illegal, and the very way that we use science to inform policy decisions. And so we can't afford to dismantle that process. What is at stake here is much bigger than simply what he might do to individual policies or deletion of specific information or silencing of scientists. If we walk back this larger process, that's going to do irreparable damage to the way we use science in this country.
Well, let me start with the overarching budget threat, the threat to all of the federal government's R&D investments. So far, what we've heard about the economic policy of the new administration is that they want to cut taxes, spend $1 trillion or $1.5 trillion on infrastructure, boost the defense budget. And if they do all of that, the numbers simply don't add up. There is nothing or less than nothing left for discretionary spending other than defense spending. And when discretionary spending is threatened, R&D tends to be the first to go. I'm particularly worried about R&D at the Department of Energy, where some may survive, but clean energy and energy efficiency are likely to be slashed. I'm worried, of course, about the EPA, all the more after Mr. Pruitt's confirmation. I am worried about the Food and Drug Administration and its regulatory authorities. I'm worried about the National Science Foundation, which, along with the NIH, is our biggest funder of fundamental research. And while maybe important programs at NIH will survive because they address the diseases that afflict members of Congress and their families, the funding at the NSF is certainly even more at risk. We already knew that many members of Congress don't understand that basic research is the seed corn from which all future applied advances will come. Basic research has been under fire at NSF for a long time, and that trend is unfortunately likely to be accentuated. Other things at risk, obviously research and monitoring on climate change, on toxic substances, on water, on ecosystem services. Those are likely to be early casualties if something doesn't change. I think investments in scientific infrastructure are probably not high on the infrastructure list that Mr. Trump has in mind. Investments in accelerators, telescopes, high-capacity computing, satellites, again, are at risk. I'm afraid that the federal government's efforts in STEM education, which were pursued very energetically in the Obama administration, will be at risk. And I think our international cooperation in science and technology, which was greatly stressed in the Obama administration, will be at risk. Too many members of Congress already regard international cooperation in science and technology as a hose through which U.S. competitive advantage is siphoned into the possession of our adversaries and competitors. They don't understand the enormous mutual benefits in a globalized scientific world that come from international cooperation in science and technology, and I fear that too may be a casualty. But I'm also very worried about the broader shift in culture around science, technology, and innovation that Gretchen already referred to. And let me put it this way. It's pretty clear by now that we have a president who resists facts that don't comport with his predetermined positions. That bodes ill for the survival of the Obama administration's emphases on scientific integrity, transparency, public access, and fact-based decision-making. I think it bodes ill for the continuing presence at the policy-making table of the government's experts in science, technology, engineering, and math. In the Obama administration, there was a very strong and successful push to make sure that the science, more broadly, the STEM talent in the administration was present at the table when policy issues were being discussed, where insights from those scientific domains might be germane, and that's likely to go by the boards. And when that happens, that bodes ill for recruitment and retention in the federal government of the high-caliber STEM talent that the federal government's crucial roles in using, applying, and advancing science and technology require. So I fear we are in for a very rough ride.
My concerns go way beyond a concern for science and scientists per se. My biggest worry is about the consequences to society. If scientists are muzzled and intimidated, if science is defunded, data are deleted, and scientific institutions are undermined. I fear for the health and well-being of scientists and the economy and the environment, indeed, the very future of our democracy and our world. Why? We need science at the table for individuals and for institutions to make smart decisions. We need data to help businesses and citizens be smart about what they do. We need science to create the new knowledge that will help society solve many of the big problems that are facing us. So that's my big concern. We have warning signs that are very sobering, but to narrow it down more specifically to the question about science and society, I fear that neither policymakers nor citizens will have access to the best available science because federal scientists are afraid or unable to do their best science and to share it with the public and policymakers. I fear that the scientific integrity policies that are essential for wise decision-making and that we spent a huge amount of time and energy trying to put in place will be either ignored or dismantled. I fear that science will be seen increasingly as partisan and untrustworthy. And I fear that significantly fewer talented scientists will go to work for the federal government and many good scientists will leave government. Now, I emphasize that those fears are far from a foregone conclusion and we need to do everything possible to prevent them from happening. But if they did come to pass, this could well impact the quality of weather forecasts, the release of new medicines, breakthroughs in renewable energy, sustainable fishery management, and so much more. So my real concern is undermining what science and scientists do for society and the consequences of that.
Professor Jane Lubchenco of Oregon, former head of NOAA, John Holdren of Harvard, Barack Obama's former science advisor, and Gretchen Goldman, Center for Science and Democracy. Now here's AAAS chief executive, former Congressman Rush Holt.
Some of you may have heard that there is in April to be public demonstrations in many cities and towns around the world on behalf of science. We have never seen scientists so concerned about defending the process of science beyond self-serving concerns of your next grant or whatever. There seems to be a spontaneous upsurge of people who want to talk about how science works, why science is valuable, and what it needs to thrive. And one of the manifestations of this upsurge is what is now officially called the March for Science. There are many dozens of cities that have representatives where they will be organizing these activities in late April, April 22nd, same day as Earth Day, also the same day as the Math Festival in Washington, D.C. And this march is gaining energy. The T-shirts are selling fast, I'm told. It's a very interesting phenomenon. First time in my 50-year career that I have seen people speaking up for science at large. I've seen demonstrations against atmospheric testing of nuclear weapons or for or against nuclear power or whatever. This is an unusual phenomenon. And AAAS has said that we will work with our members and our affiliate societies to help make this march a success.
Chief Executive Rush Holt at the opening of the AAAS meeting. I asked him about our own Australian chief scientist, comparing Donald Trump's approach to science to that of Stalin.
Well, I can't really comment on Stalin. I would say that I have actually heard scientists recently when they're talking about the need to defend the conditions in which science will thrive, they've brought up the subject of Soviet agriculture, where scientists were led to believe things that just weren't so for political reasons. I've seen it in Burma in past decades as well, and other places where wishful thinking of how plants should grow or how fertilizer should work has contaminated the study of how plants actually grow and how fertilizer actually works. People bring this up as an example of why looking at the philosophy of science is not idle ivory tower thinking. It is very important to whether this marvelous way of thinking actually works. It is not just empty philosophy. We really have to pay attention to how science works and how we can keep it serving humans.
Rush Holt, Chief Executive of the AAAS,